this week the precious metals rallied sharply after the Fed's decision to hold off on tapering. Welcome back to GoldSeek.com Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzek, with you for this September 20th show. Well, the Wall Street whiz kid, Peter Granditz, joins me with his view on the sector. He says gold stocks are nearing an important bottom. In fact, shares are trading near prices not seen in nearly a decade, while gold, though, is higher by several fold. Is an opportunity approaching? Well, you'll want to stay tuned for the entire dialogue. Next, Bob Hoy tells us what his technical indicators say about the markets. Then Robert Ian kicks another field goal with his latest must-hear editorial. GoldSeek.com Radio begins now with the Market Weatherman Report. Visibility was virtually unlimited over the metals exchanges this week. Investors added to gold positions on news that the FOMC failed to taper as expected. By Friday's closing bell on the New York COMEX exchange, gold finished near the break-even point around $13.25, while silver gave back less than half a dollar, ending at $21.93 an ounce. The top story impacting the markets was the FOMC decision. Fed officials unexpectedly agreed to maintain the $85 billion toxic debt purchase plan. However, the central bank could begin to curtail bond purchases as soon as the next meeting or so. The FOMC decided to wait for further confirmation of the nascent economic recovery before reducing their monthly stimulus. The president of the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, James Bullard, said on Bloomberg TV Friday that we should expect a small taper as soon as the next meeting in October. He also said the Fed's move was a close decision, that ongoing improvement in Labor Department data relative to September will increase the probability of tapering, given the low inflation. However, the Fed can afford to be patient. Following the September 18th decision, the yellow metal leaped nearly 5%, the sharpest rally in over 2 years, with considerable short covering amid surprised investors who expected the central bank to curtail stimulus. Elsewhere, Dr. Mark Faber, publisher of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom report, noted that the move was a complete surprise to many participants. Among the 64 Bloomberg economists surveyed by Bloomberg News, 33 predicted that the Fed would reduce by $5 billion or less, while 31 forecast a cut of $10 billion or more. Of those 64, economists all expected some tapering. One of the few to suggest the Fed might not cut before the announcement was yours truly. Elsewhere, Indian officials surprised the markets this week by raising key lending rates sharply to 7.5%. The rupee national currency has struggled with balance of payment related issues. The government continues to attempt to support the currency by curtailing precious metals imports. The world's leading gold and silver consumer is apparently circumventing efforts, though, through smuggling operations. Plus, China's nearly insatiable demand for the metal is apparently taking up much of the slack. Bottom line on precious metals. Clearly, investors were pleased with the Fed's decision not to taper this week. The focus will now be on each upcoming FOMC meeting. For the time being, gold and silver are no longer backdated on the NYMEX. And for the rest of this report, next week's forecast, and all the stock picks, please log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, visibility was virtually unlimited over the equities markets this week for the second week running. Investors were pleased by the Fed decision not to remove the stimulus punch bowl from the exchange floors, but some of the enthusiasm waned by Friday as calmer heads recognized the odds of tapering are now increasing with each passing month. The Dow Jones Industrials closed at 15,451 for a gain of 75 points. That's about 0.5%. The S&P 500 picked up 22, about 1.3%, ending at 16,55, while the Nasdaq fared best, picking up 52 points, about 1.4%, and ending at 37.74. Turning to domestic economic news, gridlock in Washington is threatening the economy given the enormous budget and debt ceiling, according to Gold Money's James Turk. He expects the budget crisis to support the precious metals as it did 2 years earlier. In addition, despite improvement, the unemployment rate remains below the Fed's target. Even with the Fed's saber rattling, it seems somewhat doubtful that much of any tapering can occur before year-end, especially with the holiday season approaching. Let's face it, Fed officials, they don't really want to be viewed as the Grinch who stole Christmas. Elsewhere, TransMontaigne Partners TLP is a refined petroleum products and pipeline company based in Denver, Colorado. The technical trend weakened a bit this week, Although the DCF analysis suggests the stock is undervalued by about 100%, market conditions are weakening a bit here. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, judging by the sentiment indicators, enthusiasm is far too high right here among investors, especially with the weak closing prices. I view this as a bearish development. For all of next week's stock and the forecast, log into your account. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with Peter Grandich and Bob Hoy. So more financial edutainment is headed this way. Time to get caught up on listeners' questions and comments, so opening up the phone line.
Hi, this is Rick at vrevans@bigfoot.com. Hi, Chris. I'm calling about the derivative situation. I keep hearing about how large the potential losses could be on derivatives. Seems to me that that would be a zero-sum game, that what the seller might lose, the buyer would take as a gain. It seems to me that the possible problems with derivatives would be that if they were unwound, if they unwound $1 trillion of derivatives, that would have a tremendous reduction in the money supply because of the fractional reserve banking, and it would contribute greatly to the deflationary pressures that are in the economy at the present time. I'd be interesting to hear your comments and see if I'm looking at this the right way. Thanks again. Appreciate your work on the program. Look forward to it every week. Goodbye.
First up, it's Rick. He's interested in derivatives. Well, hello, Rick. You know, I have a few comments on the situation. $1 trillion in derivatives terms, I'm sure you know, is barely enough for a gumball dispenser. Currently, our top five banks hold roughly $220 to $250 trillion. That's about a quarter of a quadrillion dollars worth of risky derivatives. That's their notional value. Much of this has interest rate exposure. The fact that such interest-sensitive securities are unregulated, I think, only compounds the issue. An article published last week showed that the total notional value of derivatives is now about $1.2 quadrillion. That's equal to 1,200 stacks of $1 trillion. Since the global GDP is roughly $60 to $70 trillion, you could argue that 20 times total annual output is the amount of notional derivatives outstanding. In other words, simply put, the world derivatives total is 20 times every good and service produced by every individual in the entire world for a year. To cover the notional derivatives outstanding, hypothetically, each global inhabitant, about 7 billion people, and business would be required to work for two decades. As for the deflation argument, I don't necessarily share this viewpoint. The Fed may taper a bit, but it is still expanding its balance sheet by $900 billion a year. That's almost a trillion annually. Plus, the ECB, Bank of Japan, Bank of China, and Bank of England, among many others, continue to print. But regardless of inflation or deflation, I'm sure we all can agree that the problem is monetary at the core, and eventually the house of cards will implode. At that point, those who have solidified their wealth with tangible assets will be the most secure. Thanks, Rick, for a thought-provoking question.
Yes, this is Kalea, and this is regarding the gold situation. As far as the money is not worth this, the money is actually worthless. The U.S. money is worthless now, and I just need some information about the gold and how to invest in the gold. And thank you. Bye-bye.
Up next, a first-time caller, Kalea, is interested in precious metals investments. Well, you know, for most beginners, we recommend an investment in silver U.S. coins, pre-1965 dimes, quarters, and halves, and they're roughly 90% silver. Now, these can be purchased at discounted prices generally, not too far from the actual price of silver we call the spot price. The benefits are many, including easy recognition, high silver content, simple divisibility, and small denomination for small transactions. One of the great characteristics of buying these silver coins is the added collector's value. Sometimes you can find numismatic or collector's quality coins, which enhances the value, but you don't have to pay generally for that feature. And you can start very, very inexpensively for roughly just a few dollars. You can purchase a silver dime, or for a few dollars more, a silver quarter. So it's a great way to start. You might consider giving these small silver coins away as gifts, particularly to children, our nieces, nephews, grandchildren. I think it just makes a fantastic starter gift for most people. Thanks, Kalea.
Hey, Chris, this is Jay from New York. Great show as usual. Thanks for all that you do. My question today is about numismatic versus bullion coins. I received some literature in the mail today from this company claiming that numismatic coins have not been performing as well as bullion coins, and they are willing to purchase your numismatic gold or silver coins for cash, or you could trade them in for bullion coins. What would be your recommendation or your thoughts on this topic? And how is the market doing generally for numismatic versus bullion coins? I understand numismatic coins is a complex market. Each coin needs to be evaluated on an individual basis. But simply for the private investor who's looking to preserve his or her wealth and maintain some privacy, what would be your recommendation or thoughts? I remember Bob Chapman saying a number of times he was a proponent of numismatic coins. Look forward to your answer. Have a great day. Thank you.
Up next, it's Jay from New York who asks about numismatic versus bullion coins. He's received a request for his coin collection. Well, you know, Jay, you know, you can navigate your browser to pcgs.com for numismatic coin values. When it comes to collectible coins, I suggest that investors separate the practice from investing. Think of precious metals investing as a component of your overall investment portfolio, and numismatic or coin collection as a very fun and enjoyable, rewarding hobby, similar to art collecting or furniture collecting. By building an eclectic coin collection, I think that individuals can really learn a lot about the customs and traditions around the globe. However, keep in mind that as our friend Bob Chapman used to point out regularly on the show, really miss him, don't I know you all do as well, that unscrupulous types have the upper hand with collectibles. So when it comes to buying collectible coins, remember, PCGS is your friend. That is the grading that you want to look out for. And as I said, PCGS.com will be a guidepost for you.
Hello, Chris. This is Dave calling from Los Angeles, California. Hey, a couple of things. First, a guest request. I would love to hear an interview with Jim Willey. He's very intelligent in the precious metals market. And I would also like to know how your permaculture setup is doing. Last year, you ran a couple of pieces where you described what you had with the fish and them feeding from the plants and them providing food for the plants and some sort of a closed loop, maybe not closed, but I'd love to hear more about that. So thanks a lot. Great, great show. I love your choice of music and keep up the good work.
Next up, it's Dave from Los Angeles, California. He makes a guest suggestion and would like to know more about aquaponics. Well, thanks for the guest suggestion. You know, he's always welcome on the show. As for aquaponics, you know, our blue tilapia did have a brood, and it appears as though our Nile tilapia may also have a brood now. I'm watching a female closely. We were able to save about 100 fry by separating the female from the brood. They're all in a 60-gallon tank now. We're no longer doing an outside pond. As for the greenhouse, it's filled to capacity with tropical plants, tree collards, you name it, dwarf lime, dwarf lemon, and dwarf oranges. However, my work, school, and personal obligations really are a constraint on my time for such projects. So my best advice is it's an excellent hobby for the retired, the homebound, and those with plenty of time on their hands. Thanks, Dave, Jay, Rick, and Kalea for all your thought-provoking questions. On that note, we're going to close down the phone line here. And remember, you can call in. The number is toll-free at any time, 24 hours a day. The toll-free hotline is 1-800-507-6531. You can call toll-free, record. You don't have to speak with anyone. You can delete and re-record as many times as you like to get it just the way you'd prefer. 1-800-507-6531. I hope you'll jot this down, please, on a Post-it pad or plug it right into your phone and or cell phone for easy access. You can call us anytime it's convenient. Wherever it's convenient for you, maybe you're having troubles, your portfolio is keeping you up at night, any question at all with regard to precious metals, investing, portfolio, stocks, I'll do my best to answer your question. 1-800-507-6531. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio, so we want you to stay with us. Gold up 10% and silver about 12% from the reaction lows. Today's featured guest joins me with his outlook on the sector. For over 25 years, Peter Grandich has published commentary on the mining and metals markets and is editor of the Grandich Letter. Welcome back, Peter Grandich.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Let's begin the discussion, if we could, today with news regarding the world's most powerful economic position here. The current Federal Reserve Chairman Ben S. Bernanke is expected to retire in the next few months. And last week, a newspaper in Japan announced an inside story that Dr. Larry Summers would accept the offer from the administration there for the position. But in an abrupt change of pace, Summers rejected the offer this weekend, as well as Timothy Geithner. And it appears that Fed Chair Janet Yellen is now the key candidate. Given her dovish comments and track record, do you agree that this bodes well for inflation hedges like precious metals?
I think it's not so much that it bodes well, that it takes a potential big negative away. I think there would have been a pretty good argument he would have been a net negative for gold, at least in the very short term. I think that was something that's been removed. I don't know if her appointment brings any real buy-in into gold, simply because somehow a belief she will be. I think so much rest now for gold on the next 24 to 48 hours of what we see, if any, on the tapering. I think much of what I think the tapering is going to be is baked into the price. So I'm not too concerned that there's going to be a dramatic sell-off in gold if the tapering actually takes place this coming Wednesday. My bigger concern, and really the only real concern I have for gold right now, is the continuing mysterious selling at the worst time, at the worst possible ways of gold in the paper market, particularly now that it's taking place overseas. There's just no reason for this, and these type of things aren't some, you know, loose hair trader, some one person who doesn't know what they're doing. This has been, and in my mind, and I think many others, a concentrated effort to manipulate the price down. And the fact that they showed up again in the last couple weeks concerns me somewhat, although I'm fairly certain that they don't have the power, or is the market as vulnerable as it was before.
Last week, Goldman Sachs, I'm sure you noticed, bashing the price of gold again, calling for $1,000 or maybe even below $1,000 an ounce, a laughable figure. Point to their previous bearish call on gold as one of the key factors that seemed to break investors' nerve. Read an article on Sunday evening pointing out that just as Goldman was making that announcement, they were accumulating a sizable position in GLD, the Street Tracks Gold ETF. I'd like your comments.
Well, we know history has shown, we don't have to go too back far. We only have to go back to the financial crisis, that Goldman tells its clients one thing and does another. So, you know, I don't be surprised at that. I do know that if you're anybody in the world, monetary or political, you either worked for or will eventually work for Goldman Sachs. So you do have to pay attention. You just have to figure out, by the time they're telling the general public about something, what stage you in that move. And I'm going to say you're in the latter stages. But it's still a concern of mine. No sentiment is very poor because even myself, someone who believes that the fundamentals are roaring bullish, still feels like he's being prodded with a electronic prod when we see these markets, suddenly fall $20 on contracts trading at times. With anybody with a right mind who took any trading course at all would know that that is not a good time or a way, in a manner to move a price if you're really looking for a good price. So it's clearly been done to create some type of fear or some type of concern, I just feel that it doesn't have the sustaining power that it did because the market's in much better shape than it was 12 or 18 months ago.
Well, the economic numbers are somewhat mixed with, I guess you'd say, a positive slant, but it might not be ample enough to prompt the Fed into tapering. The number of Americans seeking jobless benefits did fall below 300,000. That's the first time in about 7 years. Initial claims dropped by over 30,000, and that's according to the Labor Department on Thursday of last week. Employment, a key factor cited by Fed officials for determining their QE policy. I'm viewing the odds of tapering this week as a bit lower, maybe 50-50 at best. Should the Fed, though, pull the trigger, my feeling here is we might see a brief market reaction, and that would set the stage for a capitulation that could lead to the next rebound. If the Fed doesn't taper, my guess is that might be all that's required for a retest of our resistance levels at 1525 gold and 26 silver.
Well, I think they're tapering. I don't think there's any question that they're suddenly not going to not do anything because it would put them in a very bad light. They may moderate what their original thoughts were, and they may not be anywhere as steep, and I think the market would react positive to that. But my whole scenario that I've had in my mind that I've shared with my readers is that the Federal Reserve is going to taper while the economy actually gets worse off, and then eventually will suddenly be put under pressure to not only end the tapering, but come up with another gimmick of some type of easing because the economy and the job situation will have really fallen off the cliff. And I see that in the first quarter of next year. And that's when, and only then is when I've told my readers quite some time that I felt that there'd be a significant sell-off in the U.S. equity market, because then it would be perceived that they're behind the curve and they're no longer an insurance that stocks really can't go down as long as the Fed is on your side. So whether there's a $20 billion or a $5 billion, I think much of it is baked. I think we just need to get through it. The only shock, like I said, would be something bigger than people imagine, and I think that would hit the gold market. But outside of that, I do think the scenario you painted is quite possible, that whatever it is very short term, and then there's a move to the upside because it's out of the way. And it's very important now to remember that we're now going to be in a very seasonally favorable period for gold through November. This is when jewelry fabricators worldwide use the most gold that they have for their needs to make steel, one of the most significant things, usage of gold, and that's for jewelry. And so I think with all that in mind, and that we're seeing, and I think it's kind of important, although we've all been beaten up or we've been in the juniors, I think we're also starting to see some, relative strength in the significant mining shares, that even with gold down last week, we saw many of them, hold their own, or if they did decline, they declined much less than the percentage of the metals. And I just think the market is sold out. I don't think it's yet there to drive it up a lot, but I just don't think we're going to see another big decline like we saw earlier this year, no matter what the Fed does.
I was actually reviewing last night the mining sector relative to 2000, I want to say in two. We're approaching on the XAU numbers that we haven't seen maybe, but close to 10 years ago, the XAU was near these capitulation lows here. I think at some point, this absolute distaste for the sector is going to reverse in a big way, because I find it difficult to believe that the mining sector, despite of increased oil and energy expenses that obviously are weighing heavily on them, that these miners are in toto worth the same as investors viewed them 10 years ago, given a $1,200, $1,300 gold price. That just does not seem to make any logical sense in any scenario that I can come up with. I'd like your comments.
Well, that is, and that is the main argument to own them now. It's difficult for those of us who spend a lot of time in the metals market because we suffered through what I've called the worst bear market in my 30 years because the metal prices are so much higher. No one could have ever imagined that you'd be 10 or 15 years ago that someone would tell you gold was even $1,200 and somehow you would lost 50 or 80% on mining stocks. It would just be just something you couldn't fathom. We used to pray to God it would just get above 400. So I just think, like I said, I think things are washed out. I don't know yet if there's enough there to sustain a rally and keep it up unless gold gets, like you said, above the 1550. I think that's the game changer. We're going to need to get above the big crack below 1550 to really get the market moving again. But first things first, I do think we need to retake back where we were in the last few weeks after this Fed news. I think the next few days after the Fed announcement will go a long way and tell us whether or not this gold market is indeed washed out. And like I said, unless there's something very bad on the tapering news, bigger than expected, I think the surprise will be to the upside, not to the downside.
No, that's a good point. And, you know, Bank of Japan, well known for its dovish ways, you might even say the original dove, beginning quantitative easing and money printing long before it even had the technical term QE, well over two decades ago. They're maintaining the BOJ, their dovish ways. I'm sure you saw recently in past few weeks here, the ECB and the Bank of England also maintaining low interest rate levels and very little talk of ending stimulus. It would really be, as you say, a sea change or game changing moment if we do see that. And one really wonders if this nascent economic recovery would continue in this fashion and whether or not the housing market would suffer tremendously, which I think is one of the remaining legs of this domestic economic table here.
I've never seen or believe that we've had an economic recovery. What I just think is the severity was lessened. I don't know of any group, and I have different businesses, so I get to speak to people different parts of the country, and I don't know anybody that's seen a sustained, strong economy. We certainly came way off the depths in some housing markets like Vegas and down in Florida. But to say that there's true economic expansion, we haven't even seen it in the employment numbers. We don't have to rehash stuff, but we know the numbers have been really bad. You know, we're seeing most of the workers in part-time. We're seeing no increase in income itself. We're seeing the few rich get richer, but the rest of the people falling below what they made 5 or 10 or 15 years ago. So there's been no real economic recovery. I don't like that word. I just think we've seen the lesson of the decline. And if you think about it, when you think about how much more debt we've increased just to have this economic recovery, if that's what it takes, don't spend another dollar because it's not worth it. The bottom line is that I just think another sea change that's happened, and there hasn't been a lot of talk about this because we've all been under siege in the metals market, but another change that has not played into the metals market in quite some time, but I think it's creeping back in, particularly from foreign investors, and that is political concerns. I think, you know, it appears the emperor has no clothes in the United States. The love that the world and Americans had in general for Obama and thought he could be a great leader, I think, is gone. I think his death blow was his poorly handling of the Syrian situation. And I think that, believe it or not, becomes a supporting factor as we go into the new year for gold, that there will be more and more political instability and America not viewed as a country in itself that can really handle itself on the world stage anymore. And I just think that's something that's going to become more spoken of because, unfortunately, the situation may not be in the news at the moment because of Syria. But everything that was taking place a week ago in terms of the civil war and all didn't stop, and all the problems in that whole region hasn't stopped. And that's why I think when you get outside of North America and you talk to, and I do talk to investors or hear from investors, or at least make sure that I read what investors are thinking in the Far East and in Europe, and that's why I don't read the publications here, but I read the publications that have come from those areas of the world. Many of them continue to believe gold is a worthy asset to own, both for political reasons, economic, inflation, and just as a pure investment. And that's why I just don't think we should be fearful that there's a couple hundred dollars or these numbers. You know, every time this seller shows up, they also follow up with the story about how we're going down to 1,000 or 800 or so forth. And what simply amazes me, and I got to add this, is the multiple of stories that come out on down days, and almost impossible to find a bullish story on the few up days in gold, just as another indication that, you know, the market is just so overly done bearish.
You know, you're really lecturing the faculty there with regard to the recovery. It really does require a different moniker. When you remove the bogus inflation numbers, then you get the true GDP deflator. And then when you have a accurate GDP to work with, economic growth in the United States for more than a decade, one could even argue the year 2000, if you use John Williams' numbers from shadowstats.com, is flat to negative. Add that together with the bogus unemployment numbers, and you go back and you use the 1980s U6 figure, the dichotomy between the actual numbers and what appears to be the real numbers. And I would also point out that right now, according to the Census Bureau, 147 million people are either at or near the poverty level. That's roughly half the United States. We just inched even higher to 48 million now on the SNAP's food stamp program, a shocking number, which means you'd have 48 million Americans wrapped around food pantries, soup kitchens. You could probably wrap every major city several times with the number of people who would be requesting handouts if it wasn't for the food stamp programs. But I also wanted to address one other just brief thing here. This is not a political venue, and I certainly do not take any stance because I'm frankly just not interested in partisan politics. I was very impressed with the current administration resetting one of the, I think, most important precedents that we've had in this country since the first president, George Washington, took the oath of office. And that was the president put the bid for war in Syria in front of Congress for approval. But other administrations changed that precedent in, let's say, the past decade or so. And that, I think, was a frightening shift of events that could lead ultimately to an overthrow of the country, a coup, or even a dictatorship. The current administration did put it before Congress and give the people at least some say in whether or not we're going to be in perpetual warfare in true Orwellian fashion. And unless you want to comment on that, I'd like to move on to the next question here. You know, in geopolitical news, you mentioned that the Syrian issue is no longer such a big deal. We saw the Russian President Putin send an envoy this weekend to discuss the chemical weapons that apparently America was so concerned about, and apparently they've agreed to hand over their weapons. So at least for the time being, you know, we're not seeing as much concern there. Would you like to make any comments on that geopolitical situation before we move on?
Well, I'll just say that you may not be seeing it, but everything that was taking place leading up to it hasn't changed. And that's why eventually that part of the world will come back as a news event. It may not come back as a chemical weapon event, but the fact of what's happening in the Civil War and how it can play out geopolitically in that region hasn't gone away.
You know, last week we heard a interesting story that I've seen virtually nothing in the mainstream news, that the nation of Poland, its government, seized up to half of pension funds in Cyprus-like fashion. The trend in bail-in seems to be gaining some momentum here, but hardly making, as I said, the headline news. Should investors be concerned? And if so, what measures do you think they should take to insulate their portfolios from the ramifications of these future government-sponsored capital raids?
Well, again, I just think it goes back to those who argue ownership of assets that you can control and have are always better than being stored away somewhere and you're left in terms of a paper understanding that it's yours. Possession is the old 9/10 of a rule. So in terms of bullion, it certainly argues the physical bullion ownership. It also argues that, you know, we can't, while I don't think it's something that's coming anytime soon, we can't just simply assume what happens there can't happen here. You have to be on guard for it. And if something like that does give you sleepless nights and all, then you have to look at ways that could, you know, eliminate or lessen that opportunity. And what that would include is diversification and not having all of one's assets in any one currency or in any one country.
You know, the list of countries demanding the repatriation of their sovereign gold reserves is growing. First, it was Germany. I'm sure you'll remember Venezuela, Switzerland, and even Mexico. This was another little anecdotal story. The state of Texas was even inquiring with the Federal Reserve that it would like the return of its funds that apparently were on deposit at the New York Fed. Well, this week and last week, two more countries, Finland and Poland, last week, a growing outcry from its populace and growing movements from both countries to restore their sovereign gold stockpiles. What do you think?
Well, again, that's what always takes us back to what I felt that this whole 18 months or 2 years of severe decline in gold, given the fact that it came on the heels of what originally was the most startling news, that Germany first couldn't even see its gold, and then it agreed to only take a small percentage of it back over, you know, a seven-year period. If you would have told me this story 5 or 10 years ago and then said, Peter, if we were having this interview 5 or 10 years ago and you said you saw the future, this is a story, what do you think happened next to gold? I would have told you it would have doubled or tripled, and yet it went down, you know. So I just think it's more of a concern for us that thinks there's a smoking gun out there, that all the gold that's supposed to have been and the things that Gatter and others have argued for years is correct, and that someday we're going to wake up to it and it's all going to come apart, and when it does, the price will be dramatically higher. I mean, it's just no reason now that for so many countries to want to do that if there really was a true safe sense that they felt that everything was right. And, you know, again, this is the argument of those, and then when we see these strange trading patterns, and therefore they try to create a sense of the opposite, I think we have to be really concerned about this news, and it's just more evidence to what I and you and I and some others believe will eventually be the unearthing that all the gold that's supposedly out there isn't, and so many people have so many different calls on it that it in itself, like the derivative world, is going to be a major problem.
Think of the nightly news, television, stock talk is usually at the top of the subject list we see there. Every now and then, maybe gold and silver make the conversation, but usually in a derisive manner, suggesting that, well, the bubble has popped. But then, you know, any serious student, I think, of financial history knows that few bubbles end without significant public participation. And sources show right now more than 1 out of 2 Americans own equities. They have stocks in some fashion, in some manner. They may have a stock participation program at their employer, but roughly half of Americans, actually a bit more, the top three figures suggest that less than 5% have any meaningful precious metals investment. So there are roughly 10 stockholders for every gold and silver investor. That is far from a bubble, and I'd like your thoughts about just how long this myth can persist regarding a precious metals bubble.
Well, it's not so much that. It's the tens of billions of dollars spent over decades by financial institutions to keep the game of stocks and bonds going, and to make it a myth that if you even consider gold, that you know you're one of these tinfoil hats or one of these end of the world people, that would be the only reason you would want to own it. Let's face facts. If gold does really, really well, it's because stocks and bonds aren't, and vice versa. So you can't expect the 99.9% of the people who make their living selling stocks and bonds to support the notion of owning gold. So you're just never going to get the general financial institutions or their sales force suggesting people to own it. The important point of what the point you brought out is to say that it's been in a bubble when so few people own it, is kind of silly in itself. But it's kind of silly in itself, the general reaping on gold. You know, it was a stealth bull market. Look, we went up for 12 years in a row and only went on one particular day when there was a big number. Was there even any reporting of it? Can you imagine if the stock market went up for 12 years in a row, how many reports we would read about it? So it, you always have to keep in mind that gold is a hated investment. It is never going to be portrayed in a positive light, not only by the financial institutions, but most of the media that make their living off those financial institutions. And to say that anything's in a bubble, but I think it's also important to make a note that you made some talk about how bad the United States off is, how few people have real money, and what are they buying? They're buying stocks. Yet, where people are making money in the world, particularly China, they're waiting online to buy gold. You know, those people buying gold or the people here. And, you know, I kind of would go anywhere where the people that are making money are the people that I would say are somewhat smarter. So I just don't buy the bubble stuff. But again, it's more of the propaganda that's floated out there. And you got to remember that propaganda is always going to be there because 99.9% of the people in the financial world don't want to see gold up.
You know, demand for precious metals remain red hot. The U.S. Mint sales of silver coins setting records again this year. 33 million ounces, that's over 1,000 tons, matching the 2012 already, the total year sales. Perth Mint, Royal Canadian Mint, and the Australian Mints are all set for records or near record sales again this year. About 144% jump in gold maple leaf sales in Canada. That's quite a surge, plus a 60% surge in their silver maple leafs. You add it all together, we're seeing record demand in China, particularly at the Shanghai Exchange. We're seeing record volumes. We still see strong and solid premiums over the typical gold price between Shanghai and the London exchanges. Even India's total imports have more than doubled, climbing to 3,000 tons in anticipation, of course, of the upcoming seasons that we have that you alluded to earlier. We have, of course, Christmas, Hanukkah, and many of the Indian festivals and many other seasons as well coming up. So it's a generally positive period. When you take a look at all this, I'd appreciate your perspective as an investor who I'm sure was trading through or at least monitoring very closely the last precious metals bull market of the 70s. Did we see record demand around the world from the consumer as gold plummeted from its 850 zenith? Or is it different this time around? In other words, do you see similarities or parallels between 1980 and today, or is this just the early or middle innings?
The 1980s was a paper-driven market, nor was there a huge drive up in physical demand when it rose, nor was there an exodus of mass quantities of physical gold sold to drive it down. It was a paper-driven market. The difference is, and that's why many of us have remained confident long-term, is that the underpinning has always been what the physical market does. And during these declines, the physical purchasing went up, not down. And that's always been my argument. When you look at real sell-offs in other markets, most recently, let's just look at, you know, the real estate market. When the housing market went bad, people weren't using the decline in the price of homes to buy more homes. They were just selling at whatever they can get it for. There was just sellers, no buyers. Same thing when we had gas shortages. You had a big car with a big engine, try selling it. When gold declined from 2011 to most recently, despite the decline, we saw demand for gold going up. And that just doesn't happen in a market that's, you know, set to go, you know, lower and lower and lower. I think one other point before we run out of time, I think, again, this is something that's not been taken into account because those who have remained in the gold market have just been so beaten up this last 12 to 18 months. It's been hard to hold on to anything, and that's part of the purpose of this manipulation, to get you to the point and feel that there is no hope. But another thing that came out a month or so ago when the World Gold Council put out their numbers, which I thought was a startling piece of information, it's there for everybody to see, and that is, they looked at worldwide gold production, and if you took away what the ETFs sold last year, were net sellers of, gold production versus demand would have fallen by, would have not been met by almost 35%. So that means if we didn't have the exchange traded funds selling, demand for gold could have not been met by current gold production. And so I believe we've seen the leveling off. I don't think we're seeing the selling hard anymore, the exchange rate of funds, yet we know gold production is not going up and demand has remained constant. So what is meeting that, you know, what is meeting that difference? Where is it coming from? It's this paper market that, but demand is as strong as ever. And that just isn't a market and doesn't happen in a market that's truly in a bear market, but really is in a market that's being manipulated. And eventually, all markets that are manipulated, as hard as this is to imagine, but it goes back to tulips or what have you, eventually when markets are manipulated, the manipulators finally can't keep the manipulation going. And when it caves in, if it was pushed to the upside like the tulips, was a collapse. And in this case, when something's being suppressed and the lid is finally blown off, well, then the prices just make up for lost time.
And on that excellent note, why don't we wrap up today? Please tell folks more about the Grandich Letter, how they can contact you.
It's simple. It's Grandich.com, G-R-A-N-D-I-C-H.com. We talk about general markets, obviously gold, and also we're a compensated consultant to junior mining companies.
Very good. As always, we appreciate your thoughts.
Thank you.
Fed officials took the first steps in years to curtail QE efforts. The FOMC announced a $10 billion taper in monthly bond purchases. Joining me with his view on the situation and the precious metals market, Bob Hoy, editor-in-chief investment strategist of institutionaladvisors.com. Welcome back, Bob Hoy.
Chris, good to be with you. Yeah, we live in exciting times.
Isn't that a curse? May you live in exciting times.
Oh, yeah, that's a Chinese one. I've always liked that one. But, you know, it shows that there is just too much short-term power in the utterances from the Federal Reserve. Now, on our work, and we sent out a piece a number of hours ago, not thinking about FOMC or anything. It was just that gold and silver sector had come down to some of the RSIs, you know, the relative strength. Well, it's a momentum reading. It got down into the low 30s, and that would be buying territory. Just to back up a bit, after that brilliant run out of in May and June in the gold sector, we follow the silver-gold ratio, and in any rally, silver really outperforms gold. And we run the RSI on that one, and that got up to 80, which was very overbought. And as a matter of fact, we said it was dangerous, and it was time to lighten up on the gold stocks and for the very nimble traders to play the short side of some of the silver stocks. And that's worked out rather well. And then, as I mentioned earlier today, we put one out that some of these momentum targets had virtually been reached, and we could look for a rally. The final on the thing was we didn't know whether it was going to happen quick or next week, but it happened today. Now, here's also another thing here is that the street, so the market was ready for a rally, oversold enough for that. And then Bernanke came along. Now, if you looked at Forbes and some of the bigger publications yesterday, they were already talking about a $10 billion a month taper in the bond buying program. So anyways, then he more or less confirmed that, and away we go. There was bonds rallied almost 3 points on the future. And, of course, you had this huge reversal in gold and silver, and which was going on right on into the close. So is it a major bottom? I don't know. Has the Fed fixed everything in sight? Not bloody likely. And what do we look for in here? Now, this one today is fast. Like, you've got the silver ETF, the HZU, It's up 12% today. So this is extreme short covering, and it, the same pace shouldn't be expected to last for too long. So it'll back off, take a correction. And then what are we looking for otherwise? It's the same old, same old. The Federal Reserve buying bonds, and they have bought, they've been averaging down in the bond market, whether you look at the subprime mortgage index, where mortgage bonds, where a lot of the buying went into, or you look at the bond future, and where some of the buying went into, and they were looking good while these things were rallying, and then since May, when it did a big seasonal reversal, they've been looking pretty sheepish, I would guess, and every course you ever take on investing, they say don't average down. And the Fed has been averaging down, and they're, I guess they got so much of it that I don't know how they ever get out, because they haven't restricted their manipulations just to the short end, where if they're buying 1 or 2 year maturities, then, you know, they get off the hook that way. But they've been buying the lower grade bonds, the terrible stuff like the subprime mortgages. So we're on an exciting day, Chris, and I'm pleased with the rally, and I think it needs to take a little rest in here and before it moves up again. But the momentum on the downside was into an area where you would expect, you know, the decline to begin to end. And what happened was is that Bernanke's utterances said right now that it's going to end. So let's look for next week or so a test of the lows. The other thing on the precious metal stocks that one has to consider is that there's still a probability that the decline in both high-grade and low-grade bond prices would continue after this little pledge by the Fed to keep buying after May, in the face of their consistent buying. So until we get past November, one has to worry about the other shoe coming down.
We certainly were looking for a rebound in here. We kind of stuck our necks out a bit because we saw some pretty heavy selling over the past few weeks. That capitulation low that we saw into this reaction seems to have some legs, and especially when you see Goldman Sachs calling for sub $1,000 gold, something, it didn't pass the smell test there.
No, it didn't. Yeah, I think, honestly, one just has to be completely in a trading mode, and when it's overbought, you lighten up, and when it's oversold, like earlier today, you put some back on. And honestly, to try and figure out what central bank are going to, well, we know what they're going to do. They're going to keep trying to depreciate the dollar. And one should always look at the forces that may prevent them from depreciating the dollar. And in order to do that, they have to have a speculative bid for most everything, tangible and financial assets. And for a year and a half until May, the really big bid was in lower grade bonds around the world. So then that gives the central bankers a chance to get their portion of the credit. And the bond high, that speculative rush in lower grade bonds into April was really a major phenomenon. And then you have to deal with that, and you also have to deal with an economy that's probably going to turn to weakening. It has been weak. You know, it's, as the establishment says, it's been the weakest recovery since the 1930s, and that was following the worst recession since the 1930s. So history and Mother Nature is trying to tell us something there. The other thing is that you've had a four-year recovery since June of 2009. You've also had a four-year bull market for the stock market since March of 2009. And bull markets at this length, there are not that many of them around. And in different sectors, like the utilities into April, extreme overbought. And then the last sector to get very overbought was the small caps. So let's put it this way. On the big stock market, I think the best is in. Just like we were saying in April that for the lower grade bond market, the best was likely in. So there's two important, that one asset class topped out and became fragile. And then now various stock market sectors have topped out and are facing fragility or vulnerability. And but you have this incredible but short-term influence of Federal Reserve statements. And here's the irony, Chris, is that all week of Monday, Tuesday, and certainly last week, the major financial journals were already discussing that they'd probably do the taper at about $10 billion. But if you look at it from another way, the intent of the bond buying program was to lower long interest rates. And it's not the first time the Fed has done it. It started buying bonds out of the market in the late 1940s to prevent the long bond interest rate from going above 3%. And then in the 1960s, mid-60s, 66 I think it was, they then accelerated that bond program and they called it Operation Twist. But at that point, they were trying to keep rates from going above 6%. And then, of course, as we all know, the interest rates for the long bond soared all the way up to 15% in January of 1981. But it was the mechanism of the Fed that was raising the interest rates, and their purpose was to lower them. And quite simply, they, with all their bond buying, they were injecting cash into the markets, and the traders in the bond market, future inflation, you have to put a premium on it. So there, and by the way, that 15% on the U.S. bond was the highest in history for long-dated interest rates in the senior currency. Even 300 years ago, they only got as high as 6.5% at the worst. So you're dealing with madmen with lots of power in the central banks. But overall, Mother Nature will always win. So on a day like today, the bond market was a little oversold as well. And the precious metals were getting pretty oversold. So Betty comes along, and it looks like they have great power, but only on the short term, Chris. I think that the world is facing the problem of way too much debt, and even if it was a more robust economy, it wouldn't generate enough cash flow to hope to begin to service the debt. That's on the corporate side. And then on government side, you've got tax revenues to deal with, and you're also at 4 years in a bull market for stocks and 4 years on a recovery, no matter how weak it's been. So our view on the bonds would be to let them run for a few more days and take some profits. Same on the gold, on the precious metals. Let her run for a few more days, and then take some profits, or lighten up again into it, and just sort of have in mind that there could be further general financial troubles as we go into October.
Then are you forecasting that the reaction that we saw this year to the downside in the precious metals is coming to an end?
Close to it. That's for gold. If we go into a financial storm, silver will fall relative to gold. And of course, the gold stocks will get pulled down with the big ones. So I'm just sort of saying that on an oversold for the gold and silver sector, It was pretty good. I would have been happier if it had a run for a week, but then along Bernanke came said something. But on the other hand, if the lower-grade bonds and the stock market runs into a little trouble, then one is going to be prepared to have some dull times in the gold and silver stocks. So, but gold, you know, people scared money around the world. When it goes into scary times, it'll buy U.S. Treasury bills, which puts the U.S. dollar up. And they will also buy gold, which will maintain the price of gold. But in a financial trouble, silver will then fall relative to gold, and that's always the telltale. But on today, let's call it an oversold market, a catalyst that came along prompted a rally. And we'll just see then, it'll have to go down and test the lows maybe next week, and then we'll just see if there's any financial storms come along here. So,
as we wrap up here, are there any other sectors or comments you'd like to share with the listeners today?
Well, no. I think the final part, Chris, the credit markets will dominate, and the telltale will be overbought or oversold. We had a nice oversold in the precious metals, but you still have the problem of debt service. And although central bankers can move things near term for a bit, eventually Mother Nature can overwhelm the central banks as it did in 2008 and into 2009. The establishment likes to think that there were some errors made by the central bank then, that they weren't easy enough, and all this sort of stuff. And then the other establishment likes to think that they prevented the panic from lasting forever. But it cleared the air. We're now, and then also keep in mind that the recovery out of 1932 ran for 4 years and a bit, 4.5 years. The bull market for stocks was a 4.5 year one. And so this is the big picture, Chris, is that the first business cycle out of the crash is close to ending.
Bob Horry, I wonder if you could tell folks more about the services you provide at Institutional Advisors.
Yeah, sure. You can get in touch with us at institutionaladvisors.com, or you can just Google my name and everything comes in, Bob Hoy. We've been providing research on the financial markets, metal prices, interest rates, credit spreads, the yield curve, currencies, actually in a publication to institutions since 1982, which is quite a while to be in the business. And on the financial institutions, they pay proportionately, you know, like $5,000 to $10,000 a year, but we will look at high net worth individuals at about $1,200 a year. So, but it's generally reliable, otherwise we wouldn't be able to say we've been in the business this long.
Hat tip for all your success, and we'll look forward to your next appearance here on GoldSeek.com Radio.
Anytime, Chris. Always enjoy talking with you.
Hey, Chris. This is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. There was a lot of hoopla this week about the FOMC meeting and the question of how Bernanke and the Federal Reserve would answer the question to taper or not to taper. Going into the meeting, gold and silver were hit hard on their price, and much of the discussion in mainstream media was how the price of gold would crash further when tapering occurs. But guess what? Bernanke issued a no-tapering announcement, and gold and silver shot back up in price. Gold rocketed over $50, and silver over $1.50. It's still below where it was a few weeks ago, but in watching this price action tied to the near mystical utterances of Ben Bernanke's no-tapering commentary, the story of Pavlov's dogs immediately came to mind. Ivan Pavlov is famous for his conditioning experiments involving dogs, where he would ring a bell each time the dogs were fed. Upon presentation of the food, the dogs would salivate. The dogs began to associate the sound with the expectation of food. Soon he could simply ring the bell and cause the dogs to salivate. The idea of conditioning as an automatic form of learning has had a huge influence in the development of psychology and media persuasion. I believe Uncle Ben and his handlers scored big on Wednesday. They have now successfully programmed the public and the financial media to equate no tapering comments with an increase in the gold price. Likewise, tapering comments, if and when they ever occur, will be associated with a sharply lower gold price. I can envision a scenario where the Fed announces tapering out one side of their mouth and simultaneously implements a new form of stimulus and quantitative easing out the other side of their mouth. The media will report on the tapering. The gold price will be manipulated lower in the paper gold market, and little attention will be paid to the new form of quantitative easing relative to the gold price. Or, if we continue to have unlimited stimulus, which is the likely scenario, the gold price will rise with each no tapering commentary. The Fed may actually become the catalyst to manage the price of gold upwards, which is where it's eventually going to go. Why not ride the golden horse in the direction that it's going to move anyway? The Fed is losing control of the economy. Any illusion of control they can begin to create, even if it's the perceived control of what will be an inevitable rise in the price of gold, they will do it. It's a complex psychological game that is occurring on many levels simultaneously. I believe one of the principal unspoken reasons Larry Summers withdrew his bid for succeeding Ben Bernanke as Fed chairman isn't, as some have speculated, to avoid questions about lax financial regulations or to avoid questions about his comments in 2005 about a shortage of women in engineering and science fields due in part to what he called the intrinsic aptitude of the gender. No, I believe Larry Summers withdrew his bid for Fed chairman to avoid any questions whatsoever about the paper he originally wrote in 1985 and updated in 1988 called Gibson's Paradox and the Gold Standard. This scholarly paper demonstrates a high level of expertise in gold, gold mining, and the interactions among gold prices, interest rates, inflation, and what he describes as government pegging operations. Isn't it interesting that former Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan was a renowned expert on gold, and Larry Summers is also an expert on gold? Ben Bernanke was able to divert questions on gold's relevance by describing the reason that gold was still held by the government as, quote, tradition. He may have gotten a pass with that one, but I guarantee Larry Summers would not get a pass on describing the true meaning of Gibson's paradox and the gold standard. Gold is going to rise. The last thing Larry Summers wants to do is explain why. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.